Welcome. This is Native Sun on Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm your volunteer reader, Kim Chupa Cornell. Our first story comes from Native News Online. After scrutiny, Michigan moves to release redacted Native boarding school report by Levi Rickert. A week after Bridge, Michigan published an article reporting that the state was withholding a $1.1 million study on Native American boarding schools, the Michigan Department of Civil Rights, which oversaw the research, said it plans to release a redacted version of the report in the coming days. The department had shelved the completed study for several months. Initially, department officials said the report was too flawed and failed to meet expectations. Kaufman and Associates, the Native American-owned Washington State-based firm contracted to conduct the research and produce the report, disputes the state's assessment. CEO Kevin Keefe told Native News Online that officials from the Michigan Attorney General's office instructed the firm to reduce the report from more than 350 pages in its preliminary form to about 50 pages. The Native American Boarding School Healing Coalition, NABS, reports that 8 Indian boarding schools operated in Michigan. The two largest were the Holy Child of Jesus School, which operated in Harbor Springs from 1829 to 1983, and the Michigan Indian Industrial Boarding School, which operated in Mount Pleasant from 1893 to 1934. The research conducted by Kaufman and Associates involved interviews with dozens of survivors or descendants of Indian boarding schools that operated in Michigan. Because the Holy Child Boarding School did not close until 1983, it is likely that survivors of Michigan Indian boarding schools attended the Harbor Springs School, as the other schools had long since closed. The Michigan Department of Civil Rights members of the Michigan Civil Rights Commission expressed frustration during an October meeting over what they viewed as plans not to release the report or its findings. I just want to say I'm very, very disappointed in the turns that have taken with this boarding school study, said Regina Gasco, a commission member. What about all these survivors that came and testified? We talked to these people and we assured them that now is the time we're listening. KAI stands with the tribes of Michigan and with the many survivors and descendants who trusted us with their stories. Native voices must be allowed to narrate their history free from censorship by state agencies to fully document and acknowledge the harm caused by boarding schools in Michigan. A complete history, not an abbreviated version of it, must be told, Keefe said to Native News Online. In December 2025, Michigan Attorney General Dana Nessel announced the launch of a statewide criminal investigation into Indian boarding schools and related institutions that once operated in Michigan. Requests by Native News Online to the state of Michigan have gone unanswered. Disclosure: Indian Country Media LLC, the parent company of Native News Online, conducted interviews with Native boarding school survivors and descendants as part of this initiative. The company received $4,236 in compensation, including reimbursement for travel expenses. Native News Online did not participate in writing the report, and its staff has not seen the report submitted to the state of Michigan by Kaufman and Associates. Our next story comes from ICT News, Indian Country Today. The Northern Cheyenne tribe reclaims sovereignty through solar energy and buffalo restoration. By Ileana Newman for the Daily Yonder. Brandon Small's pickup squeezes down a narrow dirt road lined with trees and bushes as we drive down the hillside toward the buffalo. We're on the Northern Cheyenne Reservation in southeastern Montana, a landscape full of yellow grasses and hillsides lined with small pine trees. Small runs the buffalo restoration program here on the Northern Cheyenne Reservation. here on the reservation, where food and energy sovereignty are inextricably linked, a new solar installation is helping the tribe become more self-sufficient. The buffalo pasture we're traversing is huge, 15,244 acres to be exact, and Small said they're working on expanding it even further. Small drove us out here from nearby Lame Deer, Montana, to check on the water infrastructure and give us a tour of the buffalo habitat and the brand new solar installation that will allow them to grow their buffalo operation. The buffalo enclosure has no transmission lines crossing it, meaning there's no way to get electricity out to the land unless the electricity is completely off the grid. Last year, in partnership with Indigenized Energy, a native-led nonprofit focused on energy sovereignty, the Northern Cheyenne Buffalo Program received a solar array that will allow Small to expand the herd and processing capacity for the facility. The 36-kilowatt solar array and 57.6-kilowatt battery was funded by the Honnold Foundation and empowered by Light and constructed by Freedom Forever and Jinko Solar in collaboration with Indigenized Energy. Cody Two Bears, the founder of Indigenized Energy, sees energy sovereignty as inextricable from food sovereignty. We need energy sovereignty to flourish because that's what's going to support all of the other initiatives that are so important to tribal people moving forward, Two Bears said in a Daily Yonder interview. Tribal nations are supposed to be sovereign nations, self-governing, and independent from the United States government. But many factors like broken treaties and stolen traditional homelands have forced tribal communities into continued reliance on federal subsidies, impeding full sovereignty. But sovereignty is still the goal for every tribal nation, and inserting independence around how they manage their food, health, and energy are some main ways indigenous communities are reclaiming sovereignty. The importance of buffalo. Buffalo are the keystone species of the Northern Plains, an animal who shaped the prairie ecosystem, but they've been nearly extinct for a century. Now tribes and researchers are proving that buffalo are key to healthier ecosystems and food sovereignty for Northern Plains tribes like Northern Cheyenne. Having bison on the landscape, especially at really large scales, is likely to increase sort of diversity of vegetation, conditions, and habitat, and likely to increase biodiversity, said Andy Boyce Perro, a Great Plains researcher for the Smithsonian Institute. Before Small started running the Buffalo Restoration Program, he worked at the Rosebud Mine, a coal mine in Colstrip, Montana. The Buffalo Program has existed since the tribe was given a herd of buffalo in the 1970s, but those buffalo were left relatively unmanaged until Small got involved and created a new management plan. When COVID-19 hit, Small started to think about how he could help. He saw the currently unmanaged buffalo, who were in the habit of breaking through their fences onto the highway, as a resource the tribe was neglecting and an important piece of their journey towards self-sufficiency. He started spending time out with the buffalo, fixing fences and supplying food, while he petitioned tribal council with a management plan for a buffalo program. I spent a lot of time out there on my own, out of my own pocket, said Small as we drove on a ridge overlooking the buffalo enclosure. It's obvious how much Small cares about the animals that we eventually find. Munching on grass on either side and in the middle of the dirt road, we are slowly driving along. Small's 5-year goal was to form a tribal buffalo program that was self-sufficient, where I didn't need any money from the tribe or federal government, he said. He said they're currently on track with that goal, but it's not cheap to take care of a herd of more than 300 buffalo. This year, we're spending $32,000 on hay alone, said Small. The solar array also brings the buffalo program closer to self-sufficiency. It currently powers a small bunkhouse within a mini split that, during our September visit, provided welcome relief from the hot sun, Starlink internet, and a freezer that holds processed bison meat. It also powers electric fences and gates to keep out intruders. Small said that they had an issue with poaching in the past. In December 2025, the Northern Cheyenne Buffalo Solar Array was named one of Solar Builder magazine's projects of the year, highlighting the remote location of the project and how it builds capacity and sustainability for the tribe's buffalo program. Eventually, Small wants to have a small processing facility on site. The solar array was built to be expandable to grow with the program. The buffalo are both a source of food and economic development for the tribe. In November 2025, Small and the Buffalo Program handed out 5,414 pounds of buffalo meat. They also sell the animals to other buffalo ranchers. The first year, Small said they sold 103 animals for around $126,000 to a rancher in South Dakota. There is a fine line between running a successful business and providing for the community, said Small. We wanted to do it in such a way that we could still get meat processed and donated out to the communities, but still have enough money to keep our operation going and keep growing and expanding. This solar array, as well as the Buffalo Program overall, helps the Northern Cheyenne Tribe become more sovereign and self-sufficient in every way. Energy policy is really health policy because of what energy extraction has continuously done to our water, our air, our land, and our animals, said Two Bears. Up next, from Indian Country Today News, the EPA wants to eliminate one of the few ways that tribes can protect their water. By Myasel Spotted Elk. Earlier this month, the Environmental Protection Agency announced a proposal to revise the Clean Water Act, specifically a section of the law that regulates water quality and limits states and tribes' authority over federal projects, as well as how tribes can gain the authority to conduct those reviews. Experts say the move would dissolve one of the few tools tribes have to enforce treaty rights and hamper their ability to protect tribal citizens. What the Trump administration is proposing to modify here is really an important tool for states and tribes because it gets at their ability to put conditions on or, in extreme cases, block projects that are either proposed by the federal government or under the jurisdiction of the federal government, said Miles Johnson, legal director at Columbia Riverkeeper, an organization that works on issues affecting the Columbia River. Developers seeking to build dams, mines, data centers, or pipelines must navigate a permitting process to do so. One requirement in the process is obtaining certification from a tribe or state confirming that the project meets federal water quality standards. Currently, tribes and states conduct holistic reviews of projects, known as activity as a whole, evaluating all potential impacts on water quality, including spill risks, threat to cultural resources, and impact on wildlife. This approach was established under the Biden administration in 2023. However, the newly proposed rule would limit reviews to discharge only, where both states and tribes were able to review projects solely based on how much pollution they would release, narrowing the scope of oversight. The proposed rule also changes how tribes can gain regulatory authority to assess water quality under the treatment in a similar manner as a state program, or TAS. Under that program, tribes are able to act as regulators, one of the few tools available to them, and directly set conditions to limit factors that would pollute waters near tribal lands. To date, only 84 tribal nations have received TAS status, allowing them to review federal projects. Currently, Section 401 of the Clean Water Act allows tribes that can demonstrate the capacity and resources the ability to review water quality standards, expanding regulatory powers beyond tribes with larger resources. The proposed change would shrink those powers, allowing only TAS tribes to perform evaluations through a separate, more rigorous authorization program. You're listening to Native Son on Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm your volunteer reader, Kim Chupa Cornell. Treaty rights are one of the strongest mechanisms to enforce against the federal government, against the state, against third-party actors, and in litigation, said Heather Tinana, a law professor at the University of Denver. It takes years, it takes money, it's complicated to do, and so you want these other mechanisms. A reversion to pre-2023 rules, Tinana said, would put higher demands on tribes to show larger scale capacity, often in the form of dedicated water departments. There's such a wide variance in tribes of what resources are available to them. Do they have other sources of revenue, right? How many staff do they have? Do they have their own environmental departments? Is it one person or is it 10? Said Tinana. During the Biden administration, tribes advocated for a baseline rule allowing all tribes some input in federal projects while seeking TAS status. But industry pushback during the comment period and a Trump win during the general election in 2024 led to its withdrawal from the EPA in December. Patrick Hunter, a senior attorney at the Southern Environmental Law Center, noted that of 7,500 projects submitted during the Biden administration, fewer than 1% were denied. Most were approved with conditions such as mitigation measures and sediment traps to prevent water pollution during construction. Tinana said that tribal review outcomes were similar. The EPA's 2025 report on tribal consultations highlighted widespread opposition to changes. The clear feedback from the tribes was, "Don't change it," said Tinana. "You're going to make it harder for us to exercise our sovereignty to protect our water and protect our community." A 30-day public comment period on the proposed rule is currently underway. The rule is expected to face litigation after finalization. Tribes have an obligation to care for the rivers and waterways that have sustained their communities since before the existence of the United States and are weighing every option to protect their way of life, said Gussie Lord, head of tribal partnerships at Earth Justice. Our next story is the prediction market boom is posing an existential threat to American Indian gaming. By Patrice Kunish from the Brookings Institute. The boom in online sports betting and prediction markets is disrupting tribal government gaming and in the process creating an existential threat to tribal sovereignty and economies. This article was originally published by the Brookings Institution and reported by Native News Online. Gaming in Indian country, including sports betting, is conducted by tribal governments under the Indian Gaming Regulatory Act of 1988, IGRA, one of the most comprehensive and complex regulatory schemes in the world. Since its passage, gaming has singularly changed the economic landscape for tribes across the country, having survived mass closures and layoffs. During the COVID-19 pandemic, tribal gaming revenues hit a high of $43.9 billion in 2024. These revenues are the primary source of tribal government support for essential community services. Yet today, the rise of prediction markets such as Kalshi, Crypto.com, and Robinhood is jeopardizing that economic development model. These sites offer sport event contracts which circumvent the IGRA's federal regulatory scheme and disregard rules such as state and tribal licensing, minimum age requirements, and consumer protections delineated in carefully negotiated compacts. If left unchecked, tribal sovereignty and the vitality of tribal economies may be undermined. This piece provides an overview of the history of the tribal economic development and how casino gaming became central to the economic well-being of tribes and native peoples. It explains how prediction markets are disrupting this gaming industry and putting tribal economic development at risk. Further, the report outlines the legal developments happening in federal courts and Congress and closes with ideas for addressing these challenges and alternative models to diversify tribal economies beyond gaming. Why gaming matters for tribes, tribal sovereignty, and limits on tribal tax revenue. Native American tribes are sovereign nations whose inherent right to govern themselves predates the formation of the United States. Tribes have a unique political relationship with the U.S. federal government, whose trust responsibility to tribes is rooted in treaties, statutes, and court decisions. Yet the federal government has consistently and severely underfunded its trust and treaty obligations to provide for the welfare and well-being of Native people through services such as health care, education, housing, and public safety. As a result, tribal governments bear the burden of filling in the gaps in services for their citizens, a responsibility they have honorably accepted under the mantle of tribal self-determination and self-government. State and local governments generally rely on property and sales tax to fund their operations and provide essential services. Tribal governments, however, are limited in their ability to similarly generate tax revenue due to a variety of issues, including the unique tenure of tribal lands, complex jurisdictional issues, and persistent poverty rates in Indian country. Tribes have the right to live on and develop their lands, but in many cases, those lands are held in trust, officially owned by the federal government and not subject to taxation. Although tribal lands are not taxed, Native people pay considerable taxes through state sales taxes and federal income taxes, which has prompted tribal governments to not burden their citizens with additional tax. Moreover, tribes are limited in taxing transactions involving non-Natives on reservation lands. Tribal gaming has helped overcome these impediments to raising general tax revenue and fostering economic development both across tribes and regions. As discussed below, gaming and the revenue generated from related enterprises have become crucial sources of tribal government funding, providing critical services and infrastructure while creating valuable jobs. Most importantly, tribal gaming supports community health and well-being. Indian gaming markets and regulation. As sovereign nations, tribes are authorized to conduct what's known as Class 3 gaming, the most regulated and lucrative class of gaming, if three conditions are met. 1. The form of gaming is permitted in the state in which the tribe is located. 2. The tribe and state have negotiated a compact approved by the Secretary of the Interior. And 3. The tribe's gaming regulators are approved by the chair of the National Indian Gaming Commission. Class 3 gaming includes blackjack, craps, roulette, slots, and more recently, sports betting. Any gaming on Indian lands that is not authorized by a tribal state compact violates federal and state criminal laws. Indian gaming began in the 1970s and 80s with a few tribes operating bingo halls as they explored opportunities to establish reliable resources of revenue to support their communities. Today, new forms of internet-based gaming allow tribes to offer gaming beyond the floors of their brick-and-mortar casinos. Following the 2018 Supreme Court decision allowing states to legalize sports betting, tribes swiftly entered the market, along with their state counterparts. In some states, tribal governments have the exclusive right to offer sports betting, while in others, they operate alongside commercial casinos. The economic impact of Indian gaming. Today, American Indian tribes are stronger socially and economically than they have been in the last 250 years. Through resolve and resilience, tribes have wrestled with more than two centuries of disastrous federal policy that caused massive land loss, destruction of traditional lifeways, forced assimilation, family separation, and a legacy of persistent poverty. But since the new era of self-determination began, tribes have achieved substantial gains in governance, economic development, and land control by taking over federal programs, establishing legal and judicial systems, and becoming economic anchors in their regions. They have increased their political activism, gained more control over their lands, and improved social and economic conditions through greater autonomy and the ability to tailor programs to their specific needs. The intrusion of prediction markets on tribal government gaming. The rapid expansion of sports event contracts through prediction market platforms poses a particular threat to tribal governments. Thus far, these platforms have been operating outside the well-crafted and well-honed tribal state regulatory scheme the IGRA established. Tribes have a compelling interest in defending their inherent and exclusive rights to conduct and regulate gaming on Indian lands. Likewise, states are seeking to protect their authority to regulate gaming activities under state laws and the U.S. Constitution. In both direct litigation and amicus briefs, tribes and states are challenging the legality of Kalshi and other prediction markets activities, hoping to prohibit them from offering unregulated sport event contracts in their territories and states. Potential pathway to resolution. So far, neither in the courts nor Congress have halted Kalshi's activities, yet both will have to address the tension between IGRA and the CEA more quickly so in the courts. And review by multiple courts in various jurisdictions may ultimately end up before the Supreme Court. Moving beyond gaming to transform tribal economies. One tribal leader already has called for post-gaming economic development for Indian country. Such an economy would involve leveraging gaming revenues to create a multi-sector economic base by adding stable, long-term financial growth opportunities and expanding tribal employment sectors, which currently are highly concentrated in gaming and government-related jobs. While gaming will likely remain a significant component of tribal business portfolios, it behooves tribes to evaluate their heavy investment and reliance on gaming with an outlook toward a more balanced economic development future. Congress and states can facilitate scaling emerging economic models for tribes by addressing issues such as access to capital, excessive regulatory burdens, and program accessibility through legislative changes and administrative reforms. In conclusion, tribal gaming is not merely about profit, it is a powerful expression of sovereignty, self-determination, and nation building. As tribes continue to grow and diversify their business portfolios, they are not only reshaping local and state economies, but they are reclaiming their futures. You've been listening to Native Sun on Sun Sounds of Arizona. I am your volunteer reader, Kim Chupa Cornell. Music is Land Back by Hallucination. If you miss a program, you can get it on demand at sunsounds.org/broadcast info and audio/on demand. Join us next time for an upcoming episode.